Welcome, everyone, to the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. I'm your host, Tohid Qureshi, and back in the UK after a couple of fun weeks in Bangladesh. But of course, the series between Bangladesh and India still rolls on. The first test finished a few days ago, which obviously India won convincingly by 155 runs. So I've got someone who's out in Dhaka at the moment to talk about that first test and also to have a bit of a look forward as well to the second test. He's commentating out there at the moment for Sony Sports, for Sony TV. He is Matt Kabir Floyd. Welcome, Matt.
How are you, mate? You okay? How's it back in South
London? I'm good, thanks. Yeah, back in dreary South London, rather be in sunny Dhaka, but there we go. Let's get straight into it, I suppose, in terms of that first test. I guess, as lots of people expected, it was kind of dominated more or less from start to finish by India, and they sort of ran out very worthy winners by 155 runs. First things first, just your sort of general take on the test and India's performance and Bangladesh's performance.
Yeah, I guess it kind of went according to what you would expect in the end. My first time in Chattogram, had a great time there. First time I've seen the ground, seen the pitch. I had heard that it tends to flatten out and can be hard to get 20 wickets on it. And that proved to be the case. You know, I think India did really well, actually, to get 20 wickets on that pitch. They were aided in the first innings by some questionable Bangladesh batting. But that first innings was the key, wasn't it? India recovered from 48 for 3 and then, 287 or something like that to just over 400 and then bowled Bangladesh out for 150, which was well under par on that pitch. So I think it went to what you would expect in the end, but Bangladesh had their moments. You know, 48 for 3 with India having won the toss. You've got Pujara in, who hasn't been in the best of form. In fact, he got dropped, didn't he, recently this year, and he just came back into the side. Had a chance to get him out. Tough chance from Nurul Hasan behind the stumps, but you know, test cricket, you've got to hold on to those against top sides. If that had been held on to, I think it was only one, then that could have been a different story. But then they dropped other catches later in the innings. They dropped Shreyas Iyer a couple of times. He played really well for his 80-odd. Pujara got 90. You felt they missed a trick there, as they did the next day when they had India 7 down and then let Ashwin and Kuldeep get quite a few runs. And then that fed into the confidence with the batting. India did bowl very well. Kuldeep bowled really well in that first innings. He found the right pace, even though a lot of people have criticised him for bowling too slow on a slow pitch. He managed to be the most threatening Indian bowler in that first innings, which was quite a feat. Really, he's changed his run up a little bit. He's bowling with a bit more pace, and I love watching him bowl when he's on form. So that was pretty much the game, wasn't it? Once India had that massive lead, You just couldn't see them not winning from there. The question was when. They didn't enforce the follow-on, which a lot of people criticise, but actually most teams don't do that at the moment. I think the stat is something like 52% of teams since 2020 do not enforce the follow-on. So I wasn't expecting them to initially. It makes it for a bit more of a dreary watch because the result is kind of inevitable from early on. And maybe England in the current form that they are exhibiting, they wouldn't do that. Maybe they bowl again. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't be massively surprised if they also batted because it's all about managing workloads at the moment. That's the watchword, isn't it? Fast bowlers' workloads get managed and that's all it's about, really. So, yeah, once India did that, batted really well, Bangladesh down two key bowlers. You know, that was a massive handicap for them. So that third innings, Indian second innings, had a real inevitability about it, even though Pujara and Gill batted really well. And then, it was always going to be a massive ask. Bangladesh started really well, Zaki Hassan looks an amazing find. I'm really excited to see how his career progresses. He could be the long-term solution at the top of the order for Bangladesh. But then once that first wicket went, it suddenly looked like they were bowling on a different pitch again. India, the spinners started turning the ball more. The seamers found a bit of reverse swing, and even their Bangladesh four. I think going into the fifth day, you kind of just felt it was going to be a matter of when. And then once Mahidi went, predictably, they felt like a pack of cards. So I think Bangladesh did well in parts. You know, they did okay in the end to get it into the fifth day. They uncovered possibly an opener for the long-term future. And there was some good bit of bowling here and there from Tajil in the first innings, Khalid Ahmed at times. But they, you know, without Shakib bowling, that's a huge, huge handicap.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you've touched on so many kind of points of discussion that we'll go into in
the whole game there, haven't I? Should we finish?
No, that's all good. Yeah, I mean, just touching on a couple of things there. Yeah, kind of agree with most of that assessment. And yeah, I think Bangladesh did have their chances in that first innings and. In India's first innings, rather. And I think, yeah, if you look at, you know, sort of India's scoring rate, we're all a bit obsessed with England's scoring rates at the moment. But yeah, if you look at India's scoring rate, I guess in that first innings, it was kind of hovering around that sort of 3.1 runs and over mark, which I felt always meant that, you know, it gives the opposition a chance, right? A couple of quick wickets and you're in the game. So even at the end of that first day where there were those sort of two late wickets right at the end of play, Mehdi Hasan Mraz getting a wicket with the very last ball of the day of that 90th over, I felt, you know, Bangladesh was still in the game at that point. There was, I think India were 2-7-8 for six at the end of day one. But yeah, as you say, you know, going back earlier into day one, there were a couple of dropped catches. Tough chance behind the stumps by Shuhan. And I think Ebadot as well dropped one somewhere on the boundary.
That was Shreyas Iyer. It was an absolute sitter, wasn't it? I mean, there was huge damage after that, but it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, the Nurul Hasan Shahan one was the more important one, but that was obviously a lot tougher.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like you say, I think it was that sort of partnership between Kuldeep and Ashwin sort of early on day two that just kind of took the game away from Bangladesh. But having said that, I kind of felt that even 404 wasn't the sort of score that, you know, you're totally out of the game. There's probably, you know, it's probably 70-30 India at that stage, if you want to put it in sort of percentage terms. So I thought that, you know, Bangladesh was still kind of in the game if they could put up a good show with the bat, but obviously that didn't happen. Yeah, like you say, a wicket with the very first ball of the innings, Shantu falling again to the very first ball of the innings. We saw it happen to him in the ODIs. And yeah, like you say, there was no one there who could really put up any sort of significant resistance. I think Mushfiq or Rahim top scored with 28, but that was never going to be enough to mount a serious challenge. And, you know, without sort of going into a bit of a depressing monologue about Bangladesh's batting woes, it's something that has sort of consistently dogged them, I'd say, over maybe the last 12, 24 months, almost across all formats as well. And I think there was one stat saying that, you know, their top four in tests have the lowest collective average of any team in 2022. So, yeah, not unexpected that they failed with the bat. But, and yeah, like you say, after that, it was really just kind of one-way traffic. But, yeah, I want to take you back to the point you were making about sort of India's approach to the game And yeah, specifically, I guess, with the follow-on and not enforcing the follow-on. And yeah, I can totally understand why they didn't do that. And I think, you know, looking at the broader picture, like you say, there's crucial points at stake for qualification for the World Test Championship final. So yeah, the win is obviously everything. But I guess having said that, the thing that kind of maybe surprised me even more was India's second innings, so third innings in the match. So yeah, the lead was stretching beyond 300, 350, 400, 450. When was this declaration going to come? Would this declaration ever come? It did eventually.
Because I thought it was early. I thought actually that India were probably going to plod along a little bit more in that second innings. But Pujara came out and hit his fastest ever 100. He looked like a player reborn, you know, looked like he was trying to play some baz ball out there. Shubman Gill scored quickly as well. So I was quite pleasantly surprised by India's approach in the second innings. I mean, they were helped by the two bowlers down, Ebadat and Shakib, obviously, massively. But I think in the past, maybe sometimes India might have just plodded along at three and over there and batted into the next day. But the fact that they pulled out early, I thought it was actually quite a bold declaration, because in theory, Bangladesh had a lot of time to bat and to get those runs. Obviously, it never works out that way because you lose wickets and then you end up having to just block it out. But I thought it was a pretty aggressive declaration, to be honest with you, and the way that they batted set it up.
Yeah, no, interesting take. I mean, yeah, for me, I'm not sure if I totally agree in terms of the boldness of the declaration, setting up a target of 513. I'm not sure if you could call that
They had 2 days and 10 overs to get it. So that's a long time to get the runs. I know that it's it's a big target, admittedly, but you know, ultimately, as you say there, you mentioned it, they have to win India these two games really to keep alive their strong chances of getting to the World Test Championship final. That gives them a lot more leeway when they play Australia. They can lose a game, maybe even lose a couple. So they've got to win these games. I think if that situation happened in this Test match, and it's the final Test, and they bowl out Bangladesh in, what was it, 50-odd overs, and they have a chance to enforce the follow-on, I think there's a little bit more chance that they will enforce the follow-on, because second Test match, they'll have seen what Bangladesh have got. This pitch, I think, will turn a bit more. They won't flog their seamers too much, and I think they'll think, right, we want to get home early because it's the end of the series. And I think teams do think a bit like that, you know, like it's Christmas time. They'll want to get this done and get back. If they've got a big lead and they can force a follow-on, obviously that's a long way ahead.
Absolutely, yeah. The turkey and Brussels sprouts are waiting back home. And yeah, I guess, just to sort of finish off on that point, I guess, yeah, there were a couple of things maybe sort of colouring India's thought processes in addition to just winning the game. So yeah, there was obviously that that game between Bangladesh and West Indies last year, about 18 months ago now, where Carl Mayer's obviously hit that amazing 200 on not out in the last innings to win the game for West Indies. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was in the back of sort of the Indian sort of think tank and their minds sort of going into that last innings. And I can't remember what the other thing. Oh, yeah. And I guess, yeah, sort of looking at things more widely, maybe, you know, we have been a bit spoilt by, you know, the daring cricket that England have been playing recently. And I guess, yeah, the thing is, it does kind of accentuate other approaches to Test cricket and accentuate the differences in other approaches to Test cricket. So when you see, for example, England kind of dangling a carrot to the opposition and you know, declaring an innings where it's quite possible that they might end up losing the game. And then you see other teams like India just not going down that road at all. I guess it just kind of accentuates the different approaches.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually, isn't it? It skews the way that we look at Test cricket. What Stokes and England are doing is not normal. This is a very, very new attacking approach. It's reminiscent of Australia when Steve Waugh took over, when they suddenly decided, you know, we can't go along at 3 and over. We have to go 4 and over when we're batting to give our bowlers enough chance to win Test matches. And I think they went on a long winning run after they made that decision. This is more extreme. They're scoring even faster, and setting, you know, really tasty, tantalising targets for opposition, which are helping them get the wins, because teams think they've got a chance of going for the win, and that gives you more chance of getting them out. So, I think maybe you're right. We shouldn't really compare others to England and Stokes at the moment. We'd all love everyone to be playing like that, but I don't think Test cricket works like that. I think there's definitely room for different approaches. And even though Pakistan's approach against England got shown up to be a bit too negative in comparison because they were playing England, I don't think that necessarily means that all approaches like that are wrong, because you can still win Test matches with a slightly more conservative approach, as long as you are not too conservative and you know when you have to up the ante. Like, I think India, you know, they upped the ante in that second innings. They didn't plod along. I think you can level that criticism at them if they went along at 3 and over and they batted into the next day. And even though Bangladesh were 2 bowlers down, you could say, OK, look, they could have put the foot on the gas here and, you know, really made a statement. I think they did make a bit of a statement there with Pujara in particular, who's someone who doesn't normally play like that. And to see him go out and actively be aggressive, I think they, you know, they wanted that from him. I think Dravid and Kale Rahul would have said, you know, let's not faff about here. If we're going to bat properly, let's do it, and let's take advantage of the fact that they've got the 2 bowlers down. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, England come up against a slightly better version of Pakistan. So say India at full strength, playing a more traditional Test cricket, and just to see how that works, right? Because I'm not 100% sure, you know, you can do that the whole time. We'll have to see. I mean, I'd love everyone to be playing like Stokes and England. But the beauty of Test cricket is that not everyone does play in the same way. So it'd be fascinating to see. I'd love to see England go to India this winter, full strength England, full strength India, turning pitches like we saw the last time England were there, and see what happens this time, you know, with England being ultra aggressive. And I think it'd be really exciting cricket. I don't think we'd get many 4 days, they'd be over in 2 or 3 probably, especially if the pitches were turning.
Absolutely, yeah. No, lots to look forward to with that England team. And of course, we've got the small matter of the Ashes coming up in the summer as well. I guess the last word on sort of India's sort of performance and tactics. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that Pujara inning, so ended up 102 not out off 130 balls, which is most un-Pujara-like if you look at his career as a whole. And yeah, their run rate in that second innings, in their second innings, was over 4 and over, 4.18. So yeah, it's possible that, you know, the effects of England and their new approach is kind of permeating through to other teams and the way they play. But yeah, let's watch this space for how that develops going forward. So the other, I guess, well, the only really kind of bright spot for Bangladesh in the Test, and you mentioned it there up front, was the performance of their debutant batter, the opening batter, Zakir Hasan, who top scored with 100 on debut in that forlorn run chase. He actually, well, him and Shantu, let's rewind a little bit. So yeah, him and Shantu under a fair bit of pressure, getting out first ball in the first Bangladesh innings. You know, they put on over 100, I think it was 120 odd which, you know, at that stage gave Bangladesh supporters a little bit of heart. You know, that 513 was still miles off, but, you know, seeing their openers put on 100 against, you know, such a vaunted India attack was something to cheer about.
Yeah, that was significant, actually, wasn't it? I think that partnership of 124, highest opening partnership ever against India in Test matches for Bangladesh, which surprised me when I heard that stat. It wasn't just the runs, it was the manner in which they did it. You know, both of them looked totally comfortable, totally at ease. The pitch seemed to have flattened out a little bit at that point, but I think a lot of that was down to the way they batted. You know, they left really well. They looked rock solid in defence. They put away the bad balls when the opportunity came. They didn't just get in a bunker and block, thinking, well, God, 513 is a long way away. Let's just bat time here. They actually, no, they took scoring opportunities. So Shanto, that's really good news. You know, if he can, they've given him a lot of rope, Bangladesh selection committee and head coach and skipper. I think he went 15 innings roughly without a 50 until that innings. So that's a big thing. If he can carry on and use that as a platform, be a bit more consistent, that would be great for Bangladesh, because Tamim could come back. He can open Zakir, and then Shanto can go to number three, which, you know, if they're playing well, it just gives you much more of a solid base for then the likes of Litton, Shaki, Mushrika to come in middle order and hopefully build on some good starts. So Shanto, that's really good news. He needs to keep going. But Zakir, obviously, is the one that everyone's going to get very excited about. You know, if you had a choice between Zakir and Shanto now, you'd obviously pick Zakir as the opener alongside Tamim. Just the manner that he went about it, and the fact that he was so unflustered and so organised, the temperament looked really suited to Test cricket, didn't it? Just the way that he, even in the first innings, I thought that 20-odd in the first, he looked very organised. We all said that in the commentary box. We said, wow, that was, you know, only 20-odd, but not a bad first effort in Test cricket. And he's got a very good defence. I think he played spin really well. He faced a lot of overs of spin for that 100. He took a lot of the spin bowling, and Shanto took a lot of the seam at the other end when they had that partnership. He played Ashwin really well. He cut really well. The odd sweep occasionally come down the track, just took really good options. Doesn't look like he's got every shot in the book, but the shots he has, he plays them at the right time. I looked into his stats, his first class stats, and what sticks out is he's got a really good 50 to 100 conversion rate. I think he's got 14 50s and 14 hundreds. So every other time he gets to 50, he goes to 100, which is, again, another really good sign of someone who has got a regular temperament, capitalizes on starts. Excuse me. And he also lasted 402 balls for Bangladesh A against India A, which was the innings that got him into the test side in that unofficial test series. Got 170 odd not out, saved them from defeat in the first game. So if I was a Bangladeshi fan, I'd be getting pretty excited about this guy, because it's been a while since they've had a solid opener, someone who you can rely on, you know, alongside Tamim. Because that, as you say, has been the Achilles heel, especially this year, just getting off to too many poor starts, often four down for under 100 or something like that, or even less. So if they can get that side of the game sorted, seems to be, you know, always a pretty solid looking middle order, decent spin options, and now all of a sudden some good fast bowling options as well. So if that top order can come together and be a bit more consistent, I think it'd make a huge difference going forward for the test side.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, Zakir's debut and that century, I think, yeah, it was good for so many reasons. One thing which, you know, you kind of touched on there is that it creates a bit of competition as well in amongst those sort of top places, which, you know, Bangladesh just seem to have, you know, a dearth of talent when it comes to kind of top order batters. So, you know, going back sort of 12 months, obviously the captain was Moumenul Haq, and it's been quite a fall from grace for him over the last 12 months, first losing the captaincy and then, you know, his form and confidence just kind of falling off a cliff. But yeah, you're right. You've got people like Tamim coming back into the team. Also, you've got people like Mahmoudul Hassan Joy, who wasn't selected in the in that first test, but you know, we know what he can do. Scored a century out in New Zealand earlier on in the year, so another kind of youngish, exciting prospect. So yeah, the more sort of competition there are for places in that top order, I think the better. And yeah, I mean, Zakir Hasan, it's been an interesting career, actually. I've looked a little bit at his backstory. So firstly, he comes from Sylhet, which is of huge significance to probably the majority of British Bangladeshi supporters, cricket supporters, because most British Bangladeshis, not all of them, but most originate from the region of Sylhet in the northeast of the country.
Didn't know that. Well, why is that?
I mean, how long have you got? We could do a whole podcast on the
short answer.
The short answer, I think it's to do, so if you go back to sort of colonial times, maybe. I mean, I'm probably getting this wrong, but I think it's basically to do with seafarers, like back whenever, like for some reason, yeah, you'd get lots of kind of people on, on cruise, basically being the crews of these ships that would transport sort of cargo and goods and whatnot from, I think it's, yeah, back in the day, the East India Company as well. I think, yeah, there would be some sort of seafaring that connected the two countries. But yeah, we could talk about that for hours. It's a fascinating subject, actually. I'd love to sort of speak to a historian about it. And
we'll do a series on it.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so he's from Sylhet, from the northeast. So. Which is a madly passionate region for cricket in Bangladesh. And yeah, also the other thing is, yeah, he's not actually a youngster. So I think he's 24. He's played a good amount of first class cricket, and he's kind of toiled away in the domestic scene in Bangladesh. And it's quite interesting because my sense, I've watched a little bit of first-class cricket in Bangladesh, and my sense, and sort of speaking to some of the sort of local media and local journalists, is that, you know, it's very much an unloved competition in that it's not given the resources that it really needs to flourish. So, you know, you look at some of the wickets they play on, you look at, you know, just basic training facilities, the sort of umpiring standards, you know, all of it could be a lot better. But, you know, he's someone who's kind of toiled away at that level. And yeah, by sheer kind of volume of runs, he's kind of broken into the national team. And one thing that particularly interests me is that if him doing that actually then precipitates a bit of a change within, you know, the BCB's attitude towards the first class game. And actually, you might get the powers that be sort of thinking, well, actually, maybe we should invest a bit more sort of time, resource, money into improving that structure if it produces players like him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good point. I think it's something maybe it's been neglected here a little bit over the years. You know, I know there's that facility at the Sher-e Bangla where I think all of the academy, age group sides, women's sides, main side, they all train there. And you probably need to have more than just the one facility. And they've got an indoor school, haven't they, down in Chattogram? But I think they do need better facilities here for first-class cricket and just general pathway stuff. Maybe it's something that they haven't quite got their heads around here. And if more players can come through the first class system, then that might encourage them to. But the problem is that it's hard for anyone coming through the first class system coming from a system where you don't have great facilities, you don't have great pitches, you don't have great umpires. It's then a massive ask for someone like Zakir Hasan to then go into a test match against Akshar Patel and Ravi Chandran Ashwin and Kuldeep Yadav on a different kind of pitch, maybe to what he's used to playing. Totally different environment, cameras there and all that kind of stuff, scrutiny, you know, shows how well he's done to hit the ground running. But I think he is the exception, not the rule. I think the problem is that if you have a system like that, then you don't give people the best chance to succeed. It's too big a step up for them. You need to find a way of just bridging that gap.
Definitely. And again, we could probably speak for hours about the lack of or you know, the improvements that need to be made within the sort of domestic structure and just the cricketing structure in general in Bangladesh. But let's not go down that rabbit hole at this very moment. But instead, let's kind of look forward then to the second test, which starts in less than 24 hours time. I mean, you're out there in Dhaka at the moment, and obviously you were there for the ODIs that took place in Dhaka, so you've got a bit of a sense of how the pitch and the conditions might play out. I guess, you know, in general, we're all expecting a pitch that turns and turns significantly, certainly significantly more than Chattogram. Actually, you know, I thought the pitch in Chattogram was a pretty good one for cricket in general. You know, we all say we want to see a contest that goes 5 days roughly, and, you know, is a decent contest between bat and ball, which I thought in the main Chattogram was. But I think, in Dhaka, it's going to be different. I was kind of listening into the press conference with Alan Donald, Bangladesh bowling coach, just a few hours ago. And it seemed that his thinking was that, this is definitely going to turn. It's going to be a lot tougher for the batters.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. As I said, I haven't done a test match here before, but I've seen quite a few. Well, I've worked on a few on TV, so I've got a vague idea of how it plays. But I've been speaking to the Bangladesh coaches actually quite a bit over the last few days and trying to mine them for some information about what they think is going to happen. And they all seem to be of the opinion that this test won't go 5 days. Put it that way. Not only turn, but a bit of variable bounce as well, which we saw in the ODIs, actually. We saw, particularly in that first ODI, a little bit of up and down bounce, especially for the seamers. And I wouldn't count out the seamers in this test match. In fact, the last test played here this year between Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, I think I'm right in saying that the two Sri Lankan opening bowlers, seamers, got 17 or 18 of the wickets to fall. So obviously there's something in it for the seamers as well if they get it right. Bangladesh won the toss, didn't they, in that game, and they were 24 for 5, recovered to 300 odd. But that's going to interest Mohammad Siraj and Umesh Yadav, and I think Tuskin will come back for this game. I wouldn't be surprised. Ebanot's out, so I'm pretty sure Tuskin will come in. You know, he's bowling really well in white ball cricket at the moment. Can he translate that form into test cricket? He hasn't quite cracked test cricket yet. His stats aren't great, but this is a different bowler now, isn't it, this year? So hopefully he can hit the ground running. Khalid Ahmed showed some good signs in Chattogram, and he was the best bowler in the West Indies on the recent tour there. So I think Siraj, Umesh Yadav, if that's the seamers that India go with, I expect they will. I think India will probably go with the same team. And I expect Bangladesh to go in with a couple of seamers too, Khalid Ahmed and Tuskin. Be interesting to see if Tuskin adds a bit more firepower, because it was noticeable, really. Obviously, Ebadot was injured, but Siraj and Umesh Yadav out-bowled the Bangladesh seamers that slightly higher quality. And that actually, the wickets that they took were quite significant in the game. You know, Siraj took 3 wickets early on to help India bowl them out for 150. But yeah, keep your eye on it. It's got to turn. But I don't think the seamers are there just for fodder. I think the seamers are going to have a say in this game as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Although, you know, not looking forward to the 3:30 a.m. starts back here in the UK. That's something that I'd
rather be at the ground. Much easier.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, I think it'll be an interesting test. Like you say, I think the bowlers are going to play a big part in it. And yeah, if it lasts for less than 3 days, you might even be back in time for Christmas dinner.
Well, that's right. I don't want to get too excited. But yeah, if it goes 3 days, I don't think it will, but you never know. Yeah, I could maybe get out, be Christmas Eve. I could try and get a Christmas Eve. I could land in the UK and on Christmas Day and surprise my parents and go and see them. But I'm not banking on that. My prediction, I haven't even looked closely at the pitch yet. So, you know, who knows? It could be absolutely flat. You know, you never know. It's unlikely here in Mirpur, but it could be. I think odds on probably something like a 4 day finish, and then whoever bowls the best. I think Shakib will be bowling again in this test match, which makes a big difference for Bangladesh. Huge difference, actually. So him bowling, if Tajul and Mehdi can bowl better than they did in Chattogram, Tajul bowled well initially, but then fell away. Then Bangladesh have got a chance because, you know, it's not India's strongest side. But the key thing is Bangladesh have got to bat better in the first innings than they did in Chattogram. And a lot's going to be on, you know, the young opener again and Chanto and... whether they stick with Yasser Ali or not, number three, we'll have to wait and see. You know, I mean, personally, I would probably want one of those senior guys to be batting a bit higher, you know, Mushfiqur or Shakib. I guess he's bowling, so I understand why he comes in down the order. I know Litton's got pushed up to number four, but I don't know, maybe Mushfiqur number three, but I don't think he wants to bat up there. Yeah, we'll see. I think it's win the toss and sure, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we shall wait and see how the second test unfolds. It's been great chatting to you, Matt. We've got like just a few minutes left, but I did want to just, you know, reflect on your sort of personal experiences of Bangladesh, because I know it's your first time out there. Bumped into you on the roof, I think it was, of the Mirpur Stadium during I think it was the first ODI. I mean, fantastic two ODIs. I mean, all three ODIs were quite special and unique in their own way. But just a quick couple of reflections on Bangladesh and kind of your time out there so far.
I've absolutely loved it, to be honest with you. It's the one place on the list of test playing nations that I haven't been to. So fantastic to cross it off the list and experience it. I'm half Indian, so, you know, I'm quite used to being in Asia. I spent a lot of time in India. I've been to Pakistan before as well, Sri Lanka a few times. You know, it feels quite comfortable here, actually. You know, for someone who's half Indian, you know, the food is excellent. Really, really good fish. Had some good curries here as well. Culture is slightly different, obviously, to Indian culture. My mum's from the south as well. You know, she's not, if she was from Bengal, then it would be a bit more similar to me. But yeah, everyone is so friendly and you know, very willing to help out. Everyone loves cricket, the people that I've met here. I mean, the passion for the game in the stadium is unbelievable, really. It's kind of, in terms of noise levels, I would say only India is as noisy as that. You know, it really is incredibly loud. And the atmosphere for the first two ODIs, as you say, in the Sher-e Bangla was amazing right at the end, with Bangladesh close to pulling off a famous victory and then getting over the line in the end. You know, almost fanatical support, really, wasn't it? It's quite unique the way the fan base here have really high expectations, you know, which is interesting. But they're also very supportive of their side. You know, I didn't see much negativity. It's very partisan, you know, and pro Bangladesh, as it should be. So it's quite a heady mix. You know, it's a really electric atmosphere, you know, when Bangladesh are competing. That is, you know, the third ODI, Chattogram was dead quiet for half of the game, well, probably most of the game, actually, even though Ishan Kishan was doing something special. So it's very partisan, but I think that's the way it should be when you go overseas. You know, it should be partisan, it should be all about the home side. But yeah, those two games, they'll live long in my memory for best atmospheres that I've been to. I really enjoyed Chattagram. You know, like it just where we were staying, we were more in the centre, a little bit further out here. So it's hard to get into Gulshan and places like that. But I have had a little bit of a walk around here. But Chattagram, I got to get out a little bit more, went to a couple of restaurants nearby. The air is a bit fresher there, isn't it? Because by the sea. On the way in, we saw this amazing sunset over by the shipyard, which I stopped and took a couple of great photos of. So that was a beautiful introduction to Chattagram. And I like Dhaka too, because I'm a city boy, you know, so I'm from London. I like the big city. Dhaka is a proper city, you know, it's pumping, there's stuff going on. We went out for a really nice Japanese meal, actually, the other night. We've been to a couple of great restaurants in Dhaka. Well, once, actually, the Bangladesh coaches took us there because they know the area very well. So I think, you know, you could live in Dhaka. I think as a city boy, you could live and have a great time. You know, the only thing is the traffic, obviously. You know, you never get used to the traffic. I mean, I've got to leave to the ground at 6:30 in the morning or something crazy like that tomorrow because of the bloody traffic. So that's the one thing that I would want to change of this place. And I'm sure everyone who lives in Dhaka thinks the same. But overall, I've had a great time. Yeah, I'd love to come back.
Brilliant. I mean, I'm so pleased that you're enjoying it over there. And, you know, all your experiences have been positive. And just the last thing that I would say is I think it's great that, you know, that you're over there sort of broadcasting, helping out with the broadcast, because, you know, I often say that I feel, you know, sometimes Bangladesh cricket isn't kind of at the forefront of everyone's kind of mind when you think about international cricket. So I think the more people of your sort of caliber who go out there and sort of commentate and help sort of bring you know, Bangladesh cricket even more to life, the better, really.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, well, I think it's just great to have the opportunity to come here and see different things. You know, I think all commentators and presenters should try and go everywhere, really, and try and experience different working environments, different cultures. I've always loved traveling. So, yeah, I think it's good to challenge yourself. I've really enjoyed it. And the thing is, here is Bangladesh. It's, you know, it's kind of like a gold mine, isn't it, for the ICC because of the passion for the game. You don't get that passion for the game everywhere. So that's why I think the ICC needs to have a strong Bangladesh. And it's just a question of how the authorities can, you know, keep working, keep developing stuff. The ODI form looks very good now. How can they find a way of translating that to Test cricket and T20 internationals? Because with that fan base, you know, that's a powerful tool. It's a powerful backing that you have there. And it's just about getting the resources put in the right places. But I've got no doubt that, you know, Bangladesh will improve in Test matches and T20 internationals in the next few years. I'll be keeping my eye closely on it.
Excellent. Thank you, Matt. On that positive note, I think let's wrap up. Thank you. Thank you once again for joining us, Matt. And thank you, everyone, for watching the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. Please do check out the Twitter feed and, of course, the website there, sightscreencj.com. And I'll be seeing you again very soon. But it's goodbye for now.